All right. I think I'm going to... Can you hear me? I think I'm going to stop because I have to finish... Come on, guys, settle down. I have to finish the lecture from Tuesday and then move on to the next lecture. So, by the way, so you've all seen the email about the assignment? You've all? No? Well, you haven't. No? There was an email about the assignment that's been sent already, and, well, I'm assuming you haven't started. Any of you started already on the assignment? How's it going? You finished?
Almost.
Almost, really? It's too easy then. You should start early. So there will be a lecture on the assignment on Tuesday, so you should try to attend this. Okay, let's start. So I'm going to try and finish what we had from Tuesday. So if you remember, we were looking at this backtracking search, right, as part of solving constraint satisfaction problems. And the bit we were at were, you know, where we're looking at inferences that we can do in addition to doing things about the assignment. So we want to look at these inferences. So I already went through. So remember, we went through these various heuristics in terms of what you can use to decide how you're going to choose a variable, and what, you know, how you're going to choose a variable to assign next, right? And how you're going to pick a value to give to that variable. So that, these were two choice points, right? So the idea is, in terms of doing inferences, that we want to make sure that we're doing the assignment that we can try and rule out, you know, we can try and fail early, basically, right? So we keep track of remaining legal values for an assigned variable, and we terminate search when any variable has no legal values. So that's the idea, okay? Right, so this is our map coloring problem, so we'll illustrate it with this. So I'm going to go through forward checking once more. So these are the domains. So remember, we got three colors. We tried to color each one of these particular states. Is it states? Yeah, whatever they were called. So, okay, to start with, each one of these are, you know, the domain is free for each of them. They can all be colored any particular color. So we decide to make Western Australia red. So what happens once we do this, right? Remember, we can't have the same color for two adjacent states. So if we make this red, then it means we cannot have red there. So we can remove it from the domain for South Australia. Okay? So it cannot take that value anymore. So the next step is, what can we do after this? Okay, so we say, okay, what if we decide to make Queensland green? Right, so if we make Queensland green, so then we know that Northern Territory cannot be green either, so we can rule that out. And we know that New South Wales cannot be green either, so we can remove this, right? And we know that South Australia cannot be green either, so we can remove this from there, right? So what happens is that when we do an assignment, we can sort of do this forward step. We sort of look forward. It's like a look ahead, and we try to say, okay, what influence will this have on other variables that are lying around, right? So can we remove values from their domains so that basically we have, you know, we're pruning down the tree. We have less choices, right, in terms of when we try to assign the variables, these variables afterwards, so these unassigned variables afterwards. You all happy with this? Okay? But one thing that happens is that, right, that's all very good, right? So, okay, so yes, are we done? What did this do? All right, yeah. So we can keep going, and we can decide to make Victoria blue. So one more example, and we can do the same, and it's the same idea. Once we do this, then what happens in this case, if we decided to do this, South Australia would suddenly have no particular value possible for it, right? So its domain becomes empty. So what this means is that this particular, going down that particular branch, you know, we don't need to keep going and assign to the values to the other variables, because we won't have any value left for this anyway, whatever we do next. So we can fail early there and backtrack, right? So that's the idea here. You're happy with this? So that's a good thing, okay? So we want to do this and sort of look ahead. So forward checking propagates information from assigned to unassigned variable, but doesn't provide early detection for all failures. So it does detect some failures, but it doesn't detect all possible failures. There are some failures that are not possible, right? So for instance, let's assume we have this particular situation there. We make Western Australia red, and we make Queensland green, right? So once we've done this, and if we do this forward checking again, we'll see that we end up with this particular situation. The interesting thing is we could keep going, right? So this would still be fine, but there's a problem there. This can be, what this is saying is that the value blue only is left for this, and only blue is left for that. But these are adjacent, so we know that they can't both be blue. So, but we're using forward checking, we can't detect that there's a problem there, that these two shouldn't be blue at the same time. So what we need to do is to have something which is slightly stronger. And this is where this is when we move to this idea of constraint propagation, which is going to keep enforcing the constraints locally. So it actually is going to go beyond and going to try and look at what happens and look at neighbors of whenever you do an assignment. So it's going to try and do a bit more so that you can actually try and detect a little bit further, go a little bit further forward, a bit more look ahead, right? So try to enforce constraints so that then hopefully you can actually rule out this as well. Okay, what does it mean? So how do I introduce this? So we need to introduce the idea of arc consistency to deal with this. So what we need to do in this kind of propagation is that we want to make each arc consistent. So we always keep a set of consistent arcs, right? What does it mean to say that an arc is consistent? So remember, right, you have your variables, you have your graph, you have an arc between two variables if there's a constraint between the two variables, right? So we're going to say x arrow y, so that's just one way of writing it, right? You could write it whatever way you want. So if there's an arc from this to this, so this is consistent, right? If between a pair of variables, that the arc is going to be consistent. If for every value x in the domain of x, right, there is at least one allowed value y in the domain of y, okay? So we need to say, okay, if I pick a value for this, for each of these, I don't know which one I'm going to pick, but at least for this, there is some value that's going to be consistent with me choosing that color. If I decide to choose that color for this variable x, there will be some value for y that's going to be consistent with the value that I pick for x. So basically, I can keep the constraint satisfied, right? So let's look at our example. Let's assume we're there, for instance, right? So we're there, we've done this, so same as before. What can we say, right? So if we look at this, we know that there's a constraint between South Australia and New South Wales there, right? Okay, because these two are adjacent, right? So we look at the value that South Australia has, it's blue, okay? If it's blue, is the arc between these two variables consistent? Right? It is, right? Because if I make South Australia blue, I can always make New South Wales red, right? Okay, so that's all very good. But what if I look in the other direction, right? If I look at this in this direction, if I decide, okay, to make New South Wales red, okay, is this consistent? Can I find a consistent value here? Yes, I can make this one blue, right? That's just the symmetry step of what we had before. But what if I decide to make New South Wales blue, right? I decide to make this one blue, then what happens is that if I do this, there won't be any value left for South Australia, right? So if I decide to pick this, so this means the arc is not consistent in this case, right? So what do we need to do to maintain consistency? It means we need to delete the value of New South Wales as a possibility, the value of blue, we need to delete blue as a possibility for New South Wales, right? So basically we say, okay, if we ever did this, we would run out. So this means it's something we don't want to be ever doing, right? So, and then once we've done this, the arc is consistent because for red, you can always pick blue, okay? So can we go further if we try to do this? So what happens is that because we've changed the domain of New South Wales, this can have an effect on what's going to be allowed for the other variables that have a constraint with it, right? So in this case, you know, this is New South Wales there. And what happens to Victoria in this case if we reduce the domain of values from which New South Wales can take a value? Well, we can look at it in this way. So if I pick blue there, right, I can always pick red, so that would be consistent, right? If I decide to make this blue, if I decide to make it red, if I decide to make it green, I can always pick green. But if I decide to make this red, and I know that this one can only be red, then I will run into a problem. Right, so this means red is not, you know, I need to remove red from the domain of Victoria for it to remain consistent, for the arc to remain consistent between these two variables. Right, you happy with this? Somebody talking is really, please. So, okay, so, who is it? Yeah, it could be anyone. So, okay. So where was I? So what this means is that if x loses a value, the neighbors of x need to be rechecked, right? So whenever you remove a value from a variable, you're saying, okay, you have fewer values from which you can you know, from which your domain is now smaller, the values that you can take are smaller, this can have an effect on its neighbor, as we've seen here. Because we've removed blue as a possibility, suddenly having red there as a possibility is going to make this arc inconsistent. So I need to remove red, okay? So in this case, if we do the forward checking, so we're looking at the neighbor, we would be done here. So basically, there's nothing we can do more with, not forward checking, with the arc consistency. So what the algorithm does next is then it could pick just another pair of variables and do the same thing. So if it decided to pick this one next, then what would happen, it would find immediately that it's inconsistent with respect to northern territory. So if you pick this arc, then this is inconsistent. So you delete this, and immediately the domain of South Australia would be empty and you can fail, right? So what happens with arc consistency is that it's going to detect failure earlier than forward checking because you're going to try and do these constraints locally by looking at your neighbors, right? So, and what happens is that it can be run as a preprocessor or after each assignment. So this is what we tried in the algorithm that we've got. It's run after each assignment as part, for instance, as part of inference, okay? Do you have any questions there? Are you generally happy with this idea? Okay. So here's the algorithm, right? So it's actually fairly simple. So the what we start with is that the input is going to be the CSP, right? In this case, we're assuming it's a binary one. Remember, any high order kind of problem can be reduced to one which is binary. I mentioned that. I mean, we've no proofs, but you can check Russell and Norvig. There's some mention of this. And the local variables is just going to be this Q, which is going to be a Q of arcs, which are all the arcs that are initially in the problem. So we want to have all the arcs, and we're going to try and enforce and maintain consistency, right? So while the Q is not empty, what do? We keep going around. So we pick the first element of the Q, right? So here, you know, as usual, it's just assuming there's some Q that you've ordered in some way or another. If it comes to actually implementing this actual algorithm, maybe you'll have some heuristic in terms of deciding how you're going to queue these. But we're not going into this right now. So you pick some arc there, which is at the head of the queue, and what you do, you check, right? You make sure that it is consistent, that xi is arc consistent with respect to xj in this case, right, in that particular CSP. So this is this revised bit, which we'll see here, okay? If you realize suddenly that the domain of di of xi is empty, this means you've run out of value for it, well, you fail, right? So you return, actually, you return false. Well, it's going to fail, so no consistent value is left for xi. Otherwise, what do? If you've had to revise, right? So if you did revise the problem, meaning that you had to delete a value from the domain at some point, this means then you pick each of the neighbors of that particular node and you add a new arc, saying, you know, I need to check each of the arcs now going into the variable for which I deleted a value to see whether I'm maintaining consistency of my arcs, right? So you add this to the queue, right? And keep going, and if you do exit this thing, then you know that it is consistent, right? That's the only time you can return false. You can exit it with a failure if that ever you exhaust the domain for any particular variable, okay? So what does revise do? Revise does exactly what we said before. It just takes the CSP and two variables between which there's an arc, and it's going to return true if we revise the domain of the first variable, right? Initially, it's empty. So what we do is that for each value in the domain of xi, right? If there is no value y in dj allowing that arc to satisfy the constraint between the two variables, then you delete the value from the domain of the first variable. That's all, right? Of course, not saying how, you know, that's going to be depending on the problem, you know, what does it mean to say it satisfies the constraint? You know, that can be difficult as well to do, so, but that's all it does. And then you set revise to true if you actually ever do this, and you return revise. And that's all. So it's basically exactly what we did for the problem before, right? And the time complexity of this, you don't need to, you know, you just need to remember this. So it's just like the order of CD cube. So where D is the maximum size of each domain and C is the number of binary constraints or arcs, right? So we, you know, it's not, we're not going, I'm not going to ask you to actually justify this or anything like that. Although it's fairly, it's not that difficult to do. I think there's a bit of a discussion in Russell and Norvig. Are you happy with this? Does it make sense? So if you look at the, if you understand the example, it's easy to get the algorithm out of it, right? So it's not that difficult. Okay, so here's a summary then. So CSPs are quite important. They're actually very, very well used. They're very kind of, they're actually being used for real world problems out there, right? So many, many things fall under this. So it's a special kind of problem. So where you can use variables to define the states, and the goal test is defined by constraints of variable values, right? So we've looked at this backtracking algorithm where we do this depth-first search with one variable assigned per node, right? So we have heuristics for deciding how we're going to order the variables and which one we're going to pick to do an assignment, and also heuristic to decide which value we're going to give to a particular variable once we've chosen it, right? And there's forward checking that can prevent assignment that guarantee later failure, right? So it's quite good, but it's not good enough. You can do a bit more. You can do this constraint propagation and using, so all consistency is one particular algorithm. There are other types of algorithms, right, for this, for actually doing this constraint propagation. It's not like there's only one algorithm. So that does additional work to constrain values and detect inconsistencies. So each time you're assigning to a variable, you can try and do some look ahead to see what effect giving a value to a particular variable is going to have on the other unassigned variables. Whether it will, it could eventually cascade and result in the variable having no values left so that you can say, okay, I don't want to go any further. So what it actually does is that it cuts down on the size of the search tree, right? Because you're trying to eliminate values. So each time you eliminate a value as an assigned, you know, you're actually reducing the branching. Because remember, it's depth first search with one variable assigned per node. Right, so each assignment results in one branch. So if you're cutting down on the values that it can take, you're actually basically reducing the size of your search tree. Yeah. Any questions? No? Okay. If you're all happy. You sure? All right. So this means we can move on to today's lecture. Oh, where is it? It's this one. No, that's not this one. This one. Ah, what the hell? Yeah. Right, you're all happy, so we can, wow, 15 minutes. I don't know, hopefully I can cover it. So we're going to look at informed search today. So remember, we looked at uninformed search. So depth-first search is an example of uninformed search, breadth-first, right? So today what we're going to do is that what if we have some heuristics, some way of actually informing the search depending on the problem that we're doing, right? This is from Russell and Norvig, 3.5 to 3.6. And there will be actual proofs in this particular lecture, which you're supposed to understand and be able to redo. Right, so here's the outline. We'll look at this notion of best first search, and we'll, you know, and greedy best first search, and we'll look at A star search, heuristics, and the notion of admissibility. All this should become clearer soon. Okay, so if you remember, this is the general kind of pseudocode for tree search, right? So what you do is that you loop through. Right, so you have some kind of frontier that's going to be the initial state of the problem to start with, right? And then you go through the loop and you check if it's empty, you fail. Otherwise, you choose a leaf node, right, and remove it from the frontier. And remember, the act of choosing how you choose the leaf node is going to can give you different algorithms. If you have a stack, you end up with. Yep. If you have a, you end up with. Exactly. That's it. But what we're going to see today is that we can try and make this, you know, that's one particular possibility, but we're going to try and use a heuristic to decide, or heuristics to decide how we're going to pick the next leaf node, right? If the node contains a goal state, we return the corresponding solution, and you expand the chosen node, etc., adding the result node to the frontier otherwise, right? So a search strategy is defined by picking the order of node expansion from the frontier, right? So that's what we just talked about. I mean, the stack versus the queue is going to give you two different types of algorithm. Okay, so what is this best first search? Well, it's an instance of general tree search or graph search, depending on whether, what's the difference, what's the one of the main differences between tree search and graph search? Yeah, so it can deal with loops, right? You have loop detection, exactly, so we have a graph. And we'll see that depending on whether you're doing tree search or graph search, this has an effect on what type of heuristic you need for optimality, for instance, and things like that, right? So the idea in this case, right, it's a simple idea, nothing too complicated. But of course, in practice, it's quite tough to come up with this. So what we're going to have is an evaluation function, some kind of magical function of some kind that's going to do something for each node, right? It's going to give an estimate of how desirable it is to be at this particular node or to be in that particular state at that node. Right? So that's the idea. It's very simple. The more the desirable a state is, or, you know, we'll try and pick the one that we want, right? So we'll want to expand the most desirable and expanded node, usually the node with the lowest evaluation, right? We're going to assume that the evaluation function is going to return values, and the smaller the value it returns for a particular state at a particular node, this means the more desirable it is to move towards that node to carry on with the search, right? So the implementation in this case is going to be to order the nodes in frontier in decreasing order of desirability, right? So what you're going to do, so what does this mean in practice, really? So your frontier, right? So what happens in practice? So can you see what happens? So what would be a good data structure for this frontier, for instance? A queue? Is that, yeah, anybody else? Why a queue? Who said a queue? Yeah, but, well, that's you're assuming something. A heap or a queue. Here's the problem with the queue, right? The queue you assume, where are you putting? At the end? But I'm expanding a node, right? So my queue is like 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 7, 8, or whatever. I expand a node and it's 6. What does it mean? This means I'll have to search through the list to find where to place it if I'm using a, you know, if I'm just using a normal list. Or, so what I want maybe is a better data structure for this, like a tree or something like that, where I can actually, because I need to search to be able to know where to insert it. I can't just put it at the end because I can't assume the value that I get next is going to be greater. So in practice, all these things have to be taken into consideration. So it's easy for me to just say, order the nodes in frontier in decreasing order of desirability, but this has an overhead when it comes to an implementation because you need to decide there what data structure you're going to use. Right, so these are things to bear in mind, for instance, because you could be asked about this, right? Because abstractly, anything is possible. This is like, yeah, just order the nodes in order of decreasing, in decreasing order of desirability. So then I can take the head at each time, but this means I have to insert it at the right point in the data structure whenever I find the node, so that I can assume that whenever I'm picking the head of the list, I am picking the lowest value, right? So we're going to see this. So that's the idea of best first search and greedy best first search and A-star searches. Search is just a special case as well. Both are special cases. Okay, here's our example again of using Romania. So we can assume we're still in Arad there. You know, we're still there. We've been stuck there for weeks now. And we're trying to get to, still trying to get to Bucharest. So what we can do is that we can also keep a table like this, which keeps the straight line distances. Hey, somebody's got a message. So the straight line distances from Arad to Bucharest, right? So for instance, from Arad to Bucharest is 360, Bucharest to itself is 0, et cetera, right? So we're going to assume we have some way. Here's the map, but we can measure directly the distance between these two points, right? Just using a ruler or whatever. And this is going to be useful. It's going to give us a way of coming up with a heuristic, right? Don't we all make this mistake? Have you ever done this? You're trying to go from A to B, you're looking at the map between here and Edinburgh and London, and you look at the straight line distance. Unless you're a bird, you know, it's unlikely that it's that quick, right? Because especially if you're going by road. So, but I make this all the time. You tend to think, oh, it's not that far, right? And it doesn't help, right? Because what happens when you get maps, you look at Google Map and everything, they give you just the straight line, a ruler straight line, and you tend to measure directly. But of course, you know, if you look on the left-hand side, when you ask you for the route, it actually is much longer, right? And it's and tells you the time. So that's the difference, depending on the road that you take. But we're going to say, okay, we know what the straight line distance is between these various cities and Bucharest. Okay, so that's going to be useful. So what do we have for greedy best first search, right? So this is the notion of it's going to be greedy. So we're going to have an evaluation function, fn, right? Which is just going to be equal to hn, where hn is going to be some heuristic function, right? So what hn is, it's going to be the estimated cost of the cheapest path from state at node n to a goal state, whatever this cost is, whatever you do, depending on the problem, right? So it's just going to be some estimate that you're going to have, and you're going to just use this as your actual evaluation function. This is what I was saying before, right? For instance, it could be the straight line distance from n, from a particular node n, a state n, right, a state at node n to Bucharest, right? We can denote it by this. So this is what I do when I'm looking at the map. I'm trying to decide, okay, oh, it's very close, right? Straight line distance, I can use this to try and give me some idea how to get from A to B, which one is closest, right? So that's just an estimated cost of the cheapest path if I could go straight, for instance, if I could go in straight line, right? So what's going to happen for greedy best first, why is it called greedy best first? It's because it's going to expand the node that appears to be closest to the goal, right? It appears to be closest in straight line distance, but whether in practice it's the closest, that's a different story, because maybe there's a huge lake in between, right? The straight line distance is like this, but you have to go around the lake to get to from A to B, right? But the straight line distance looks very short, right? Okay, so it's greedy because it just assumes that it's just going to pick whatever appears to be closest. So if this is our estimate, so we use the straight line distance with the map, what do we do? Here's our example. We're at Arad, right, initially, 366, Yeah, I wonder if you, yeah, it must be miles. Yeah. Is it miles, you think? It's not kilometers, is it? Hmm? Oh, does it? Oh. Does it? Where? Hmm? Yeah, that's not supposed to be a real map. Come on. Right, so these guys, really, Russell and Novik, have never been to Romania, right? That's what you're trying to tell me. And obviously, because I didn't correct the map, I've not been here. Right, let's assume the map is correct somehow, and let's carry on with the example. Okay, so when I write, it's like 366 something, right? Miles or kilometers, I don't know. And okay, so we expand the nodes from this, right? So we look at the children nodes. So then it has Sibiu, Timișoara, and Zerin, right? So now what do we do? So this is now the straight line distance from each one of these to Bucharest is, all right, 253, 329, 374. This is greedy best first search. It just picks this one, okay? And then we say, okay, if we pick this one, let's expand the nodes, all the possibilities, right? So in this case, okay, so this is this one that looks closer, right? It's Făgăraș, right? So where is this? Is that 176? Yeah, so it just picks this one. It's just still going by the estimate, right? So it just picks this one, and then it says, okay, from these two children, Bucharest is at zero, so I'll pick that one, and we're done. The question is, right, is this good enough? Well, depends whether you're using it with graph search. Depends if you're using. I didn't say what I was using underneath though. It could be graph search. Yeah, but eh?
If it's really far away.
What is really far away?
The place you're trying to get to. Then it will do it in worst case function.
Why?
I thought it meant that it went through the shortest estimates.
Yeah, that's all it's doing. The shortest estimates. Not the shortest actual distances necessarily, it's the shortest straight line distances. It's not talking about going down the road, right? So you've got some heuristic of some kind. In this case, it's saying, I can go from there to there, and it's only 200 miles or whatever, right, in straight line. And that's all.
It's going to get tripped up if there's like a kink where you have to get further away to get closer faster.
Yeah, exactly, because it's optimistic. It's always thinking it's going, yeah, exactly, we'll see that. Right? So the idea is, yep, it's not complete in this case if we're using tree search, right? So if we're using tree search, so here are the properties as usual, like the four dimensions. Is it complete? Nope, it can get stuck in loops if it's a tree search because there's no detection of loops, right? And graph search, the version is complete in finite space, but not in infinite ones. This one is a finite space. Where is it? Well, no, actually it's not. It's not finite space. So, but if the space is finite, then it's OK, but not an infinite one. So if you do have loops, then there's a problem in this case. But if in finite space, even if you have loops, if you're using graph search, because you try to detect the loops, you'll be OK. Right? But if you do have an infinite state problem, then that's a different story. Right? So what about the time? Well, it's order of b to the m for the tree version, because you could just expand everything. Right? But a good heuristic can give dramatic improvement. That's the idea. The idea is, if you're not going to improve on these kind of things, what's the point? Right? So you want to come up with good heuristics. Right? And what about the space? Well, it's order of b to the m because it tries to keep all nodes in memory because it doesn't know where it's going to jump next. Right? Okay. So, but is it optimal? It's definitely not optimal because we'll see how to make it optimal next time in the next slide. So what is the problem with this algorithm? I mean, if you've not looked at the rest of the slides. Exactly, it has no memory whatsoever of how it got there, right? So, you know, maybe you've walked already, you know, 500 miles to get to there, and it only wants to see how far it is from the goal. So you want to have some idea how hard it was to get to where you are at any particular time so that you can take this into account too. And this is what we're going to do with A-star search, right? So the idea is basically to avoid expanding paths that are already expensive. Right? So what we do is that we alter the, we come up with a more general form of the evaluation function, right? So what happens is that for, you know, what we can say is that we're going to have the evaluation function fn, but now it's going to have two components. One is going to be gn, which is just going to be the cost so far to reach n, right? So how much energy, how far did I travel already, right? And the other one is still the estimated cost from n to the goal, right? So we have two components, right? So Fn then in this case is the estimated total cost of a path through a particular node n to the goal, or through a particular state n, right? So what we have for greedy best first is that basically we just make this zero, right? This is just zero in this case, right? Yeah? And what happens is that once we make this simple change where we say, okay, we want to have some memory of how we got to a particular state, is that we can end up with an algorithm which is complete and optimal, provided we satisfy certain conditions, the actual heuristic satisfies certain conditions, which we're going to look at. Okay? Any questions? No? Right, so we can look at an example where this time we're doing A star search. This is the same problem as before. We want to get to Bucharest. Right, but what we know now, we're going to have two components to our evaluation function. One is the distance we've traveled so far, and the other is the estimate to the goal, right, to Bucharest in straight line distances, right? So we know when we're in Arad, we've not gone anywhere yet, right? We've not traveled any distance. So we expand its, you know, we expand the frontier and look at its children. So what do we have? We have this Shibu, which is, it's easier for me to look at. It's 393, right? Because it's 140 to get to there, and it's saying it's 253 miles in straight line distance from there to Bucharest. And we can do this for each of the other one. This one is 447, this one is 449. Okay, what the algorithm does next is now to say, okay, which one has the smallest value of all these three nodes? Well, it's this one. I'm going to expand this, right? Okay. So we expand this and we look at all its children and we compute the using the evaluation function a value for each one of these. So we end up with 6464 Arad again, right? So, which is bad anyway, so we don't want to go there anyway. And we have this for Fagaras, 415, and we have 671 for this. And this one, how do you pronounce this?
Rimniku-Vilcha.
How much? How?
Rimniku-Vilcha.
Yeah. There you go. It's 413. So what this says now, the algorithm says, well, really, that's the one you should be picking, right? So we should pick this one now. So far, not bad, okay? What was it before when we did the greedy one? Yeah, so you can see already there's a difference, right? Last time, it picked that one, right? So we're here, so we pick this, we expand it. And suddenly we expand it and we look at its children and we see that for the first one is 526 because it's 366 miles to get there already, plus 160 to go to the goal or the estimate. And this one is 417 and this one is 553, sorry. So what happens now is that suddenly you realize, okay, these are all so much worse. These are all not that good. Well, not so much worse. This one's not too bad. So these are all much worse than anything else I've got, right? So actually the best one is a level up. Yeah. So in a way, it's like, you know, oops, so what I need to do, now what we're going to do is that we're going to pick this one. So as you can see, if your data structure had just been a queue and you've just been putting it at the end, it'd be a bit of a problem. So you need to be able to pick, this is going to be at the head of the queue, hopefully, already, anyway, right? So you pick this one. And you pick this one and you expand this and suddenly it's giving you back to Sibiu, which is 591, and it's giving you 450 to Bucharest. So you, as you can see, Bucharest is already in the frontier in this case, right? So no, you haven't gone anywhere, right? Remember, this is you're trying to work out how you're going to do this. You're doing this offline. It's an offline search. Yeah, no, you don't do it and then decide, shit, I've gone too far. No. No, that's not the way it should be. And I didn't say that word. So, so no, you don't do it like that. Right. I know what you mean, though, because you tend to think, well, I'm already there. Why would I go all the way back? Because it looks longer. No, you're doing this on the map in your room before you decide to go from Arad to Bucharest, because that's a smarter way of doing it, as opposed to just heading out. Right, yeah. So you're there, and where were we? So you're there, and you realize suddenly, okay, so Bucharest, if you were doing this, so Bucharest is the next one, and it's 450, right? It's in the frontier, but funny thing is, to get to Bucharest, it's like 450, whereas this one is 417. So in your search, right, which you've never been there, remember, you're still in your room, right? So you actually say, okay, this is the one that I need to pick, because it's actually closer, right? It's less expensive. So you pick this, and once you pick this, Bucharest is just there. Right? And what happens in the end, you know, this is your path, right? And it's only 400, So this gives you exactly, oh, yeah, by the way, it's 418 miles, by the way, to get to there, and it's zero because you're already there, right? So this is your goal, and this means, you know, by going down this road, you've traveled 418 miles. If you had done this one, it would have been 450 miles, right? It's also a solution, but it's a more expensive one, okay? So the question is, if I'm using A star search, it's given me a solution, didn't give me that one, gave me that one, is this an optimal solution, right? Is this, you know, did it find the best solution in this case? And the answer is yes, provided we can have what's known as admissible heuristics. Any questions about this? No? Okay. Here's a little bit of, it goes a little bit into proofs after this. So a heuristic is going to be said, is said to be admissible, right, hn, if for every node n, hn is going to be less than or equal than the true cost, h star n, right? So it's going to be less than the true cost to reach the goal state from n. So as you can see, so is the straight line distance an admissible heuristic? Well, does it say that already there? Yeah, it does. It's already there. So the straight line heuristic is an admissible heuristic because that's the shortest distance you can travel between two points. It's always going to be, you know, anything, you know, the true cost is going to be cannot be smaller than that, right? So it's going to be less than or equal to than the true cost, which is going for a winding road or going there, whatever, right? So what this means is that an admissible heuristic never overestimates the cost to reach the goal, right? It sort of always thinks it's going to be, you know, it never overestimates. It doesn't try to say it's going to be smaller than it actually is, because otherwise that's going to be useless, right? So it is optimistic, right? It doesn't try to say it's going to be, it doesn't try to say it's going to be greater. That's what I should say. Right? So it's going to try and come up, it's going to be something that's going to be like the straight line distance, and we're going to see some others, right? So thus, what does this mean? This means that the evaluation function itself also never overestimates the true cost of a solution either, right?
Is an admissible heuristic equivalent to the heuristic being a distance measure?
Yeah, it's all related. We'll see in a second. Yeah, it doesn't have to be a distance measure, but because not all problems are going to be measured in distance, it has to be some heuristic of some kind. We'll see examples of heuristic which are, you know, that it doesn't necessarily have to be just distance. But but there is a relation there. Yeah, that's right. We'll see that because exactly. So it's going to be something like that, where it's related to the triangle inequality and all this when you're talking about cost, especially for consistent heuristic. So there is a relation there because mathematically we're talking about inequalities and all that. Yeah, you're right in that way. Okay? So the straight line distance is never overestimates the actual road distance, so it's actually an admissible heuristic just by this definition, right? So the theorem that you need to remember is that Hn is admissible. If it is admissible, then A star using tree search is optimal, right? And it's always going to find the optimal solution. And here's a proof. So, by the way, you need to know this proof, right? So, what are we going to say? Okay, suppose there's some suboptimal goal G2 there, right, which has been generated and is in the frontier for the problem, right? So it's already in our frontier, so it's a candidate for expansion at some point. And let n be some unexpanded node in the frontier, also in the frontier, such that n is on the shortest path to an optimal goal g, right? So we're just assuming this. So the idea is we want to show that A star is optimal if we have an admissible heuristic. So what does this mean in more concrete if we're talking about these two being in the frontier, if A star is optimal? Any idea?
Well, it's not that.
Yeah, the path, basically we're not going to pick this one before we pick this one for expansion. We're not going to pick that one. We're going to pick this one and not that one for expansion, basically, right? Basically, this one's going to come in front of that one in the queue. So how do we prove this? Okay, so what we can say is that we know that f of g2 is equal to g of g2, right? So we know this, so we're happy with this. If this is a goal, right? And once we've reached the goal, we know exactly what the cost was to get there, right? So there's no need to, and the heuristic is just going to say it's zero because you're at the goal. So we know this, right? So that's one thing. And what do we also know? We know that g of g2 is going to be greater than g of g, right? Remember, this is the actual cost, right? G is the actual cost of getting from there to there. So this is suboptimal. It has to be that the cost of getting from there to there is greater than the cost from getting from there to there, right? Happy with that? Yeah? Okay. What else can we see? We can see that f of g is equal to So the value there at this particular goal node there is going to be equal to the cost of getting from there to there, right? So it's going to be g of g, because you know the heuristic value, the heuristic should return zero for this because we're at the goal state, right? So we have this, and what can we say? So what we can say is that because we have this and this, we can say that f of g2, right? Because we know this is equal to this, is actually going to be greater than f of g because we have this. You happy with that? Just a little bit of substitution there. Yep?
What do you mean by suboptimal goal?
It means that, for instance, if we're looking at this, this example, right? If I pick that one as going to Bucharest, so for instance, right? So this would be a suboptimal goal compared to that one. They're both the same goals, but it's just two different ways. So because the distance that I would travel for this is 418 and this one's 450. So what I'm trying to say is that I would, this one would be picked in preference to that one. That's the suboptimal in this case. Is that you end up, it end up costing you more than it could in really if you know, using the algorithm. So this is where we were. We have f of g is greater than f of g2 is greater than f of g, right? That's what we had at the bottom there. Now, what can we say? Well, we know this one. We assume that h is admissible, right? So we know that hn is actually less than or equal to than the true cost, right? Happy with that? So that's just an equality that's a given because we've assumed that the heuristic is admissible. Then what we can do from this, we can just add gn on both sides, right? So that's just some arithmetic there. We're just adding this. It's monotonic, so we can add this there. So we have gn plus hn, and we have gn plus h star n. Right, we're going to assume, it doesn't matter. So that's okay. So that's all we need to do in this case, right? But we know that this is equal to fn, right, by definition, right? And what do we know about this one? Well, gn plus h star n is actually going to be equal to fg. Why is that? Because f of g is equal to g of g, right? You happy with that? Right, because the heuristic value is zero at this point. But what is g of g? It's actually the cost of getting to n plus the true cost of getting from n to the goal, right? So this is actually equal to that. So once we've got this, and we've got this inequality there, we've got these two inequalities, we know by the fact that, you know, it's monotonic. So we can say this there, so f of g, so it's transitivity, if you want to call it like this. So f of g is 2 is greater than f of g, but we know that f of g is greater than or equal to f of n, so this means that f of g2 is greater than f of n. And once we've got this, this means, remember, A star is always going to pick the evaluation that is lower. Yep?
What's the difference between the cost and the true cost?
The true cost is basically what you would actually be... So, no, hold on. It's the difference between an estimated cost and a true cost. So the estimated cost, for instance, is the straight line distance, right? It gives you some kind of idea. Whereas the true cost is what would you be actually traveling if you had to get from A to B, for instance. That's the actual cost going by road, right? So it's easy for you to, the idea is that this should be obvious that the true cost, for instance, is going to be greater than or equal than the straight line distance when it comes to a map. It's pretty obvious because the smallest distance between two points, at least in Euclidean space, is a straight line, right? So, okay? So what this means is that A star will never select G2 for expansion, right? Even though both N and G2 are in the frontier, it will pick this one first, right? So it's going to pick the one that's on the path towards the optimal goal. Any questions? So this is a proof of showing that A star is going to be optimal because even though, and we see this from this example here, because even though it's there, right, and it puts this on the frontier, and this is actually the goal, but it doesn't pick this one. It goes from there, it goes and picks, what does it pick after this? Right, it picks this one, right? So it goes and picks this one, right? Because this one is on a path which is towards something which is up, which is better. Okay? Good. So, any questions about this? There's not much going on in this, right, if you think about it, right? It's just a bit of substitution, a little bit of arithmetic there, and a little bit more arithmetic there, and just to show that this value for this node is going to be less than the value for this node according to the evaluation function. So basically, if both of these are in the frontier, you're going to choose this one as opposed to that one. Okay? So that's good. So that's for tree search if you have an admissible heuristic. Why are we doing this? Is because it's saying we have a theorem that says if hn is admissible, A star using tree search is optimal. And this is what this shows. Okay. Well, but we can move one step further. What if we're talking about loops and all this, right? We know if we have loops, tree search is not that good. So then we hope to use graph search. Can we say something about if we're using graph search? Well, we introduce what we come up with is a slightly different notion, which is slightly stronger and which is actually interesting as well. So a heuristic is said to be consistent, right? If for every node n, every successor n prime of n generated by any action a, right, is going to basically obey this particular inequality there. Well, this is saying that the cost of expanding from n, from node n towards the goal, so the estimate of the cost from n to the goal, is no more, is no greater than taking a step from n to its neighbor, right, to one of its neighbors there, and then the plus the estimate of going from that neighbor or that child node to the goal, right? So this is a triangle inequality, basically. It's like, you know, saying, you know, the cost of estimating this is not going to be any greater than, well, of course, it's a triangle inequality, but it's not the usual triangle inequality, right? So this is saying, yeah, so the cost, no, it is a usual triangle inequality, what am I talking about? So the cost of going from there to there is going to be no greater than the cost of actually finding out what the value is to expand this node and then estimating for going from there to the goal, right? So what does this mean? If h is consistent, then we have that f of n prime, right? So this is just the equation for evaluation function for n prime, this node there, is equal to g of n prime plus h of n prime. So nothing new there, that's just the definition of the function. And what is this equal to? Well, it's going to be equal to actually saying, how much did it cost me to get from to n prime? It's the cost of getting to n, right? Yeah? And plus the step cost there. Right? You're happy with this, that this is equal to this? Yeah? It's just the cost of getting to n, its parent, and then the step cost getting from n to n prime, plus hn prime, okay, which is just the same as there. Right? And what can I say about this? Well, I can say that this is going to be greater than or equal to gn plus hn. Why can I say this?
Just apply the
chart. Yeah, you just use this, right? Because you know that this bit there is greater than or equal to hn. So it has to be that this one is going to be greater. Because if this is, say, 0 there, yeah, well, it's easy. So this is going to be greater or equal to this plus this. But what is this? This is just fn, right? Right. So basically what we have when we have a consistent heuristic is that the fn is non-decreasing along any path, right? If the heuristic is consistent, right, if we have this particular, that we can show that the heuristic that we're using obeys this particular triangle inequality, then we can guarantee that our evaluation function is going to be decreasing along any path, which is great because this means, right, this means then we can ensure optimality because if hn is consistent, A star using graph search is going to be optimal, right? Because, you know, this means we're never going to have an fn and then that path suddenly becomes greater. Right, because if it becomes greater, this means it could become greater than some other path. So it's not necessarily optimal, right? So fn is going to be decreasing along any path if we have a consistent heuristic. Any question? What does it mean? Well, if we're looking at it in a bit kind of using our map, so A star is going to expand nodes in order of increasing f value. So you remember this, right? So what it does in this case is that if we're looking at this, it's going to gradually add what's known as the F contours of nodes, right? Because remember, the F is non-decreasing along any path. So it's like what it's doing is that it's extending its reaches each time. So it's going to do things like this, and then the next step is going to do this, and it keeps going. So eventually what's going to happen, if you look at it, that it's expanding things that are further, it has to hit this, the optimal path, before anything else. Right, because the consistent, that's the way the consistent heuristic works. Right? So the contour high that has all nodes with f equal to fi, so the contour of any contour is going to have all the nodes for whatever for any value of the evaluation function that's less than that that's equal to it, right? So at this place where f is going to be less than fi plus 1. So we have an increasing f evaluation function, which basically gradually enables you to explore this and draw these contours on your map, and you're bound to hit the lowest, you're bound to get the optimal value when you're talking about a graph like this. Any questions? Because you're doing this according to increasing value. So this should remind you of like a weather map of some kind. No questions? So What you should do is, yeah, if it's not that clear, you should read a little bit more in Russell and Novi, because they expand on this a bit further, right, as usual. So, what are the properties of a star? Well, is it complete? Yes, unless there are infinitely many nodes with f less than fg. So then there's a problem, right? So if we have infinitely many nodes at any particular point, then it's not complete, because you can keep going. Remember, you're expanding your contour, it's not going to make it. And the time is exponential, it's beyond the scope of Russell and Novi, and definitely beyond the scope of this particular course. So, but you can read about it, there's a lot of work on this. And the space, it keeps all nodes in memory, so that's okay, because it needs to keep all nodes in memory, because it may need to jump anywhere, right? And is it optimal? It is optimal. Right, if you have a consistent heuristic. So just to give you an example, if we're talking about admissible heuristic for something that doesn't necessarily involve maps, right? So here's an example for the 8 puzzle. Remember, this is the start state, this is the goal state. So how can we come up with heuristics for this? If I ask you to come up with a best first search for this, here's our two particular examples. I could decide that one heuristic is H1 for a particular node is to just count the number of misplaced tiles. That's one heuristic. It's a possibility. You can just come up with it. And the other one could be like the total Manhattan distance. Do you know about Manhattan distance? Right? So basically, the Manhattan distance is the total number of squares from desired location of